to.
Now, we've read your original submission, so thank you very much for making that. You don't need to reread that to us.
I realise that, thank God.
Yeah, you already read that, but you're very welcome to speak to it and highlight key points for us.
June, I don't know if you've received it. Yes, you have. The missive, five pages, just recently released by a coalition of environmental groups.
Yep.
And it has some very interesting things in it, but you've got to be very good, have a good pair of glasses from the way my printer works. But if you look on page one, page one, right down at the bottom, probably my submission sort of concentrate on trees, because one of the first things, as a farmer, I noticed up in Northern Southland was removal of shelter belts, which were funded partly by the government in the 80s for soil and water protection, mm-hmm. and which were subsequently removed to put in irrigators. Not just little tiny K-lines, but the great big ones. John Lancashire from the Grasslands Institute said that if we have good permeable shelter belts, you can cut down the evapotranspiration by about between 40 and 60%. And so, of course, the irony there is that the irrigators are probably losing at least that much in a hot, dry nor'wester as they spout out all their water. So I worry about things like lowered water tables, simple waste of water, the fact that we probably need more shelter for not only the evapotranspiration losses, but also for stock health. And as I note in, I think, page two, the Ministry of Forestry, before it was morphed into MPI, spokesman said that if our farms plant 10% of their farms or protect 10%, the equivalent of 10% of their farms, in some form of carbon sequestration, whether it's trees or wetlands or native bush or tussock, they would cover their carbon footprint. And it seems to me, just the way things are working, that we could actually, if we can persuade the government to give us back the $480 million that's been set aside for irrigation, we could help fund farmers to plant their farms in shelter belts and riparian strips, give them about 25% help in their fencing, which is the big one. I'm happy with 50%, but if we're not going to be greedy and spread it around a bit, it could be 25%. And we're killing two pukeko with one stone, Rook Morris. He didn't hear me. that we've got all the stock health and shelter belts and woodlocks and riparian strips and things sorted. We cover our carbon footprint. We don't have to have some impost in there. We can still pay our carbon tax on fuel and get ourselves neatly out of that conundrum which we find ourselves in, where our carbon footprint is skewed because we're an agricultural nation. The Minister of the Environment, Nick Smith, said we can't cut down on cow numbers from intensive dairying because it would affect the economy. What he has neatly forgotten, of course, is that we don't have a healthy environment, we don't have a healthy economy, and I know you'll be surprised to know that I can just about remember the 1950s skinny sheep policy, where farmers were exhausted. I know, Eric, it's hard to believe, isn't it? Farmers were exhausted to double their stocking rate to increase the economy. We're being asked to do that now, which is what is behind the irrigation funding. We know that land only has a certain carrying capacity. And we know that we've done terrible things to our hills and our catchments and our waterways and things like that in the name of the economy and productivity. Lots of farmers have worked it out that you can't keep pushing inputs into. There's a law of diminishing returns, and I'm heartened by that. It might have taken a lowering of the dairy payout for some farmers to realise that, but other canny farmers have known that right from the get-go and haven't relied on artificial inputs. So they're in a really good position to get more value per unit rather than more units. And that was the thing that brought down the skinny sheep scheme. It simply was skinny sheep ending up going to the works. And I'd like to think that when we get some agricultural people into the next government, who understand farming and not just economy, that we will get some more rational ideas coming up from them. But in the meantime, we have to work with what we've got. So I'd like to think that the Environment Southland would lobby the government to change, wrest that money from the irrigation fund and put it into planting trees or protecting native forests. The Ministry for the Environment, sorry, the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment said recently that 1 million hectares of marginal farming which could be fenced off and allowed to regenerate as native forest or tussock. And that, I think, is one of those crucial ones. But the only caveat I have with planting trees is they've got to be in the right place with the right species and for the right reason. And one of the rather horrifying things, I knew a long time ago, Warren Tuckey from Environment Southland told me that if you plant exotics up in upper catchments, the water yield is reduced by 20%. It now turns out if you have wildlings or exotics up in the upper catchments, the water yield can be cut up to 40%. Between 40 and 50%. Now that's something that I think has been lost in a lot of the conversations we've had about the future of carbon trading and all these other things. So everyone's getting very excited about planting trees, mostly exotics, but we have to really look at where we plant them and what they are. And a native tree will be much happier up there than an exotic. The stock health one at the end, I keep going past them, of course, at this time of the year. And it's not just confined to cows, we've got sheep as well without shelterbelts. And I think really that if we looked at the trees being planted, that we would do a lot of good things. Gullies would be fenced off, as they should be anyway, and there'd be lots of happy sheep and cows around. You see what else I've written there. I think I've covered most of it. I've had some cuttings. I always read all the rural papers and get them out, and one of the headlines says, cows seek dry, soft places when it's cold, don't we all? And I think that, as well as sheep. So from that point of view, and I've mentioned all the other shelterbelts values that could be gained, like sequestering carbon and protecting soil and water, and enhancing amenity values and creating biodiversity corridors. And as Forest and Bird Chairman for Southland Branch, biodiversity corridors are very dear to my heart, as they are to a lot of other conservationists. And I think, you know, farmers would have a really wonderful chance to do that, especially along the riparian strips. So good things can come out of it. The only thing I haven't done here on page one is I haven't found out the rationale for increasing the maximum daily volume of 86 cubic metres per day and 40 cubic metres could be sourced from surface water. I haven't got back to that. Life gets in the way. But I will try and find out what was behind it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, shall we see if we have any questions for you? Did you finish?
I have.
Great.
I'll quit while I'm ahead.
Lord, you start. You're on the table.
Yes, I just picked up your submission under Rule 20. You talked about the 20 hectares, and you made a common exception with intensive pig and poultry farming. I presume that would be picked up under other consenting or other rules and regulations. So I'm taking it from this that you're not asking for anything else in there?
Oh no, just as I said, it's assumed the same requirements for a management plan will apply to these and the other intensive land users on these holdings. So whatever happens to sheep and cows will happen to pigs and poultry, presumably.
That's one thing, Mr.
Chairman.
Yeah, most of what you've presented today is probably outside the plan that we're looking, so I'm just
putting it in context here.
Yeah, okay. I'm applying my mind to how it might be included,
good.
So I'll leave it there.
Good. Thank you.
No, fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I had a similar sort of comment that Eric had, really, trying to find in here some things that we can particularly put into the plan that you request. We've made specific recommendations in regard to Rule 20, 21, which is clear, and 24 and 25, which you support. And the one about the trees, though, we're planting trees. I don't know if we could do much about that in the way that you've explained it to us. And this is something specific that you can identify that we would be able to modify a rule or a policy or
that's something I'll have to come back to the officers of the Environment South and to discuss, I think, at this stage, Morris, because really, we used to have Section 32, didn't we, which protected upper catchments from clearance. 34, sorry, and that's gone. So I think that's what we might have to look at, is to reinstitute something like that, which formally protects upper catchments from any clearance. I mean, we've got the latest iteration, which is spray and pray, mm-hmm. where some farmers thoughtlessly spray the upper catchments and then put in their winter feed. And we've seen it in so many places like Whanganui, where it's first big deluge and it's all down into the river flats and into the rivers. And on a serious, serious note, if we don't get this water plan right, we're looking, and I have to make this very loud and clear, we're looking at the extinction of the white-backed patty. That's the sobering background to all this. And that's where it comes in loud and clear, as affecting all of us. So with that sobering note.
Great, thank you very much for that. I don't have any further questions or clarifications, so thank you very much for coming in and making your submission to us.
Thank you.
Welcome.